Okay, we are we're in lesson one, and just we're not rushing through this thing or anything, so we don't have a time schedule to accomplish. In other words, we're not trying to get through one lesson each week or even every 2 weeks. We'll cover the material and then we'll move on to the next lesson. And that way, it gives everyone opportunity for discussion, questions, whatever that we need to do with it. Okay. Last week, we started with lesson one, and we're talking about Jesus' vision for the lost. Okay? And part of the thing that we were looking at was talking about the difference between a worldly vision, okay, and a spiritual vision of people. In other words, how do we look at people? Do we look at them from a worldly perspective, or do we look at them from a spiritual perspective? And then kind of looking at and talking about how did Jesus look at people, right? And then ultimately, how did Jesus' vision or his view of people affect how he responded to folks, right? So this morning, we're on page two of this handout here. And we're looking at the second part here, explain it and express it, all right? And we're talking, first of all, about the multitude. Matthew chapter 9, verse 36. Okay? And by the way, again, this handout, and hopefully everybody has lessons 1 through 6, okay? If you don't, then Ryan's putting some together here. This handout, the reason I'm giving them to you in advance is so that you'll always have where we're going next, okay? So that way you can prepare ahead of time, study a little bit ahead of time, and be ready. If you want to put these in a little notebook for yourself, we'll get you a little binder or something, put them all in there so you have when you're finished, you'll have a 12-lesson study guide, okay, that you can use for any time. You can use it to teach a class sometime if you want to or whatever. But I want you to have them ahead of time so that you can prepare for the discussions and so forth, because I think that will help our class time a whole lot better. Give us, you know, more input and everything from everyone else. So, the Lord's vision, a realistic vision. Let's talk about the multitude. Matthew 9 and verse 36, okay? Jesus is talking to folks. What is the verse 36 telling us here? Somebody read verse 35 through 38. Who's got that? All right, Lynette, go ahead.
And Jesus went throughout all the cities and villages, teaching in their synagogues and proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom, and healing every disease and every affliction. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion for them because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. And he said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Therefore, pray earnestly to the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers into his harvest."
Okay. So we have Jesus addressing a multitude of people, right? Okay. There's in the terminology that we're looking at here, there's a flock of sheep out there, right? Okay. As Jesus looks upon these people, what are two of the things that it says about Jesus' response or reaction to this crowd of folks? Okay, number one, he had compassion on them, right? Okay, what's the other thing? What did Jesus observe about the people here? Okay, they're harassed. Okay, by who? Okay, primarily by the religious leaders of their day. Okay, all right, and they are, he says, like sheep without a shepherd. All right, so let's talk about this for a moment. All right, so Jesus sees these people. How did Jesus see the multitude that came out to him? What other responses or ideas, thoughts did you have on that? Dolores?
He thought they needed guidance.
Okay, they needed guidance, okay? What else?
He needed somebody to listen to him.
Okay, he needed somebody to listen to him. Okay, they didn't have any protection. What else? What? They were weary, okay. Would you say that really one of the primary things that they needed was a leader? Yeah, they were like sheep without a shepherd, right? And so, you know, you think about that idea of being sheep without a shepherd. What happens to sheep if they don't have a shepherd? They're going to scatter. Okay? The wolves come, what happens to the sheep? They're going to scatter everywhere. They're going to get devoured. They need somebody. What does a shepherd do for the sheep? Protects them. He leads them from one pasture to the next and those kinds of things, right? He feeds them. Okay, so as Jesus is looking at this crowd, okay, what kind of eyes do you suppose that he's seeing them with? And don't just say spiritual.
Spiritual. A leader.
Okay, a leader.
To lead them.
Okay, all right.
He wants to give them that protection and leadership.
Yeah. Okay, he had compassionate eyes. Okay, all right. Okay.
All right. Looking at his needs, what they need.
Okay. So Jesus sees this multitude or this crowd of people, right? And he's looking at them in terms of what he can do for them. What does he have to offer them? Okay. Rather than the way some today, I started to say preachers, should I say that in there? Look at the multitudes of their congregations, and what do they oftentimes see? Yeah. Can I get out of these folks? See? The leaders, the Jewish leaders of Jesus' day, okay. In particular, the Pharisees, the scribes, the teachers of the law. How did they see the people? This question is not on your sheet here. Okay, this is extra. All right. How did they see the people? You suppose?
They saw them as inferior.
Okay. First of all, they're inferior to them.
Because they're learned and know-it-all.
Okay. And all these teachers of the law and so forth, they're a higher class of folks, right? Okay.
They needed people needed to be trained.
Okay. The leadership saw the common people basically as folks who just needed to follow along and do what they're told. Don't ask questions. Don't rock the boat. Follow the rules. Do what we tell you to do. If you don't understand the law, ask us. We'll tell you what it means. We'll tell you how to apply it and those kinds of things. So do you think that has anything to do with how Jesus saw these people as we've been describing? Okay. In other words, when we're talking about Jesus looking at them with compassion, all right, compassion doesn't have any of those kind of elements, is it? Just do what I tell you to do and and you'll be okay, and if you don't know, ask me, and those kind of things. Now, but at the same time, doesn't Jesus say, if you love me, keep my commandments? If you love me, do what I say? But what's the difference?
Jesus is doing his out of love.
Okay.
He cares.
All right.
Not to gain anything really, you know, for himself.
Okay.
To help the people, to guide them.
Okay.
Show them a better way.
All right.
Their benefit, not his own.
Okay.
Where the Pharisees, they are set in the situation up so they can meet, the people can meet their needs.
Okay. All right, Brian? Okay.
Separate from the lower class, we have to treat them as one of its own, as we treat our own child.
Okay, all right. Okay. Okay. All right.
The most important, Jesus knew that we're all on the same level.
Okay.
Be it then, be it now. Where they were behind-minded about themselves versus the people.
Okay. There's one particular word that I think we need to keep in mind here that's a huge difference, I think, between the religious leaders and how they saw the people and how Jesus saw them. And that word is power. Okay? Jesus was not looking for power over these people. Though he had power, didn't he? Okay? The religious leaders of Jesus' day, for them, it was mostly about power. All right? Exercising their assumed authority and power over the people. Right. What's the difference in terms of how you're going to approach people from those two positions?
Christ set the example, so he wants us to do the same, treat people the same way.
Okay. But if I'm trying to win somebody to the Lord, okay. What's going to be the difference as to how, you know, in terms of my effectiveness and how I'm going to approach that person if I'm coming from a position of power, okay, versus coming from a position of compassion and, you know, and so forth?
He's going to live and show them
how. Okay.
He's not just going to be way up here and say, no, this is how you do it.
Okay.
He's actually doing it.
Okay. How's that going to translate to us? How we actually interact with other people? Brian? Thank you.
So we got to realize we're still sinners even though we are doing the right thing. So we need to put ourselves in their shoes and bring ourselves down to their place. And then when we do that, we understand why they sin because we have to. So as long as we don't our power of Christians and trying to put it. We bring ourselves well down to their level to understand and have compassion in some way that compassion keeps up.
Okay.
A lot of times as Christians we try to say we're better than you because we're not sinners just like that.
Okay. And sometimes we have a problem with where, you know, because we're in the Church of Christ, we got it all together, we've got the right answers. Then you just need to do what I tell you to do. Just follow the word, like I tell you, and then you can be saved.
Paul being snooty and thinking you know it all,
okay.
Looking down your nose at others, you're never going to connect with people if you're making them feel less than.
It is, again, goes back to a lot of the things that Dale taught in the, you know, about the Dale Carnegie stuff and interacting with people. Not putting them down and not, you know, trying to exert power over them, but really approaching them from a perspective of compassion and trying to have empathy with them and where are they, where they come from. But we'll never do that if we don't keep in mind who we really are. Okay? And that our job is not to try to force people to comply with rules and, you know, and all those things. Our job is to basically share the gospel with people and help them to decide whether or not they want to be saved. Okay? So we need to get that whole power thing out of there. Let's talk about Luke chapter 7, the sinful woman. All right? Luke 7. Now, here's one of those situations where we have Jesus at the home of a Pharisee having dinner, right? And what happens? Well, they're in the midst of having dinner, and you know, there's the Pharisee, and whoever else his guests most likely were. What do you suppose, though we're not told here, what do you suppose about whatever other guests would have been there?
Fancy
people. Do what?
Some fancy people.
Fancy people? Okay.
Would have been guests under Pharisee, more or less people on his level.
Okay. All right. It's certainly not the kind of people that come from where this woman comes from, right? Okay. Jesus is there having dinner with this Pharisee at his house. They're reclined at the table. Verse 37, when a woman who had lived a sinful life in that town learned that Jesus was eating at the Pharisee's house, she brought an alabaster jar of perfume, and as she stood behind him at his feet weeping, she began to wet his feet with her tears. Then she wiped them with her hair, kissed them, and poured perfume on them. When the Pharisee who had invited him saw this, he said to himself, okay, if this man were a prophet, he would know who is touching him and what kind of woman she is, that she is a sinner. Okay? Now, how did Simon, the host, look at the woman who washed Jesus' feet? Don't just say she was a sinner. He looked down on her. Okay? Okay, she's dirt. She's unworthy, okay? All right. Do you suppose that maybe, you know, he's wondering, you know, which, probably a servant or a slave in his house, okay? Who let this woman in here to begin with? You see? Heads are going to roll kind of a thing. All right? Because now he's in this position of this embarrassing position of this woman who everybody knows is a sinful woman, right, is there in his house intermingling with his guests at his table. How embarrassing is that? Okay? How did Jesus see the woman? Look at the response. Look, let me get somebody to read verses 40 through, let's do, for right now, 42. All right, Judy?
And Jesus answered and said to him, Simon, I have something to say to you. So he said, Teacher, say it. There was a certain creditor who had two debtors, one owed 500 denarii and the other 50.
Okay, Jesus' response here, thus far, right? How's his view of this woman? Okay, why? Okay, all right, she had the bigger debt, right? Okay, she's got a huge debt that needs to be paid here. All right? How do you suppose Jesus is looking at Simon, at least, if you can understand what I mean by this, at least Simon's perception of himself in relation to that? Do what?
Well, Simon thought he wasn't a sinner.
Okay, he didn't have a whole lot of debt. Okay? All right? But this woman, Jesus sees her as someone who has a lot of debt that needs to be paid, right? Okay? Somebody read verses 43 through, Well, let's go to 47. Okay. All right. How's Jesus seeing this woman and Simon now? Well, in other words, with these things that he's saying here in response to Simon, what does that tell us about how Jesus is seeing it, Brian? Okay. 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 How do you do that, Stephen? I'm looking for a particular answer here. Okay. Okay. What else? How? How was her attitude different than Simon's? Okay. Okay. All right. Do you notice, Chuck? Go ahead.
I don't know, but that's pretty embarrassing that he didn't offer Jesus the hospitality.
Okay, that's what I'm looking for. You notice a contrast that Jesus makes between Simon and the woman here. Okay? All the things that Simon neglected to do that he should have done, I mean, these are things that were just common. When you have someone into your house, this is customary, just the common things that you do for a guest in your house.
So he considers
at least a prophet or someone that is...
Exactly. Exactly. And yet Simon neglected all of those things.
Simon told Jesus it was lesser than he was.
Perhaps so.
Because he didn't do those services.
Perhaps so. But Simon neglected those things where Jesus points out that the woman, she took care of all those things. You see? And she did it with, as some of you have pointed out, she did it with a heart, okay, that is full of remorse and repentance for her sin. Okay? And so, where Simon, if you look at the last question on the bottom of that page there, what was the difference in Simon's and Jesus' view of the woman? Okay, what did you have down for that? Anything else other than what we've talked about? Okay, Simon sees her from a worldly perspective, Jesus sees her from a spiritual perspective. Anything else? When you look at people comparing them to yourself, okay, especially people who are quote unquote sinners, then what's it really easy to do? Not just judge, but to kind of determine that person is, they're just not worth it.
Have to start out like Jesus does with a heart.
Okay, all right.
Church I went to in Arkansas. I know that lady said she had a problem when people came up front and they said forgiveness of our sin.
You just wrote everybody said,
what you trying to say? You know, she never did say she could have no sin, but obviously that's what
yeah. Yeah, what do you mean sin? I'm a church person. I go to church regularly. I don't sin. What do I need forgiveness for? Right? Okay.
Okay. To the point where somebody is saying they don't deserve salvation.
And isn't that really, in essence, what the Pharisee is doing? No. Well, we won't get it if that's our attitude. All right, verses 48 through 50. Somebody want to read that part? Ann, you had your hand up earlier. You want to read that for us?
Then he said to her, your sins are forgiven. And those who sat at the table with him began to say to themselves, who is this who even forgives sins? Then he said to the woman, your faith has saved you. Go in peace.
Yeah. There's another occasion where Jesus just openly stated to a person, your sins are forgiven. Anybody recall what that one particular one was? Yeah, the lame man, okay? And remember what Jesus said to him was what? So that you may know that the Son of Man has authority on earth to forgive sins, I tell you to take up your mat and go home. Right? Yeah, Charles is the one who went through the roof in our skids, okay? So what is Jesus, when he makes statements like that, what is that telling us about his vision and his view for the lost? What? Okay, yeah, I mean, that's why I came here, okay? Now, the reaction of the other guests that are there is what? Yeah, who does this guy think he is? He's forgiven sins, right? Okay? In the other situation, they respond by saying, no one but God can forgive sins.
But he said it specifically with blame.
Yeah.
That he was the Son of God.
Right, yeah. And so, you know, here, They're looking at this woman as being lost. Jesus not only sees her as lost, but ultimately what does he do? He forgives her sins. Okay? Right there in the Pharisee's house, of all places. Okay? Again, we look at this contrast in the way that the people, these guests, the Pharisee, all see this woman versus how Jesus sees her and how he responds to what her particular need is. Right? Your sins are forgiven. Okay? Any comment, thoughts, questions about that? No. Or any of the other guests.
No.
Specifically stated to the woman. Exactly. Okay. Let's go over to Luke 19. We're going to talk some about Zacchaeus in our worship lesson this morning. But that's okay. We'll talk about him a little bit here also. Okay. Luke 19, all right, 1 through 10, the story of Zacchaeus. So what do you know about Zacchaeus in this story? Just give me some highlights here. All right, Zacchaeus was, he was a wee little man. A wee little man was he, right? Okay. He climbed up in the sycamore tree for the Lord to see, right? Okay. So Zacchaeus is a tax collector, but Zacchaeus is not just any tax collector. How does it describe Zacchaeus here? He is a chief tax collector, okay? Now, I'll give you more insight into that during our worship lesson here this morning, but just understand that Zacchaeus was being a chief tax collector. He had tax collectors under him, okay? So he's, you know, he's up there at the top, though he is down here in stature, okay? All right? And Zacchaeus, Jesus is coming down the road, crowds of people all around. Zacchaeus has a desire to do what? He wants to see Jesus. All right, but he can't see over the crowd because he is horizontally challenged, as the term goes, right? Okay, so he do what?
Vertically
challenged, whatever. He's yeah. Okay, so he wants to see Jesus, but he can't see over the crowds. So he climbs up in a tree, hoping to see Jesus as he passes by on the way, right? Okay? And as Jesus passes by there, he stops. Okay? Now, let's take a moment here and think for just a moment. Zacchaeus is in a crowd of people, right? He's a tax collector. And they are just Jewish people. How do you suppose they felt about Zacchaeus at that point, just to begin with?
Hated
him. Okay? They hated Zacchaeus. So they would like for Zacchaeus to get stuck up in the tree, all right, and never come down, kind of a thing. They have no compassion or care whatsoever about Zacchaeus, right? How do you think the people felt about Jesus at this point?
Zacchaeus.
All right, why, Stephen?
Because, you know, it's Jesus.
Right?
He says he's going to go to the tax collector.
Okay, all right. So, you know, the crowd, they're all, you know, all excited about Jesus. And then here's this tax collector that Jesus stops and not just talks to, but does what? Yeah. How rude was that of Jesus? Okay. Jesus invited himself to the man's house. Okay. All right. Jesus says to Zacchaeus, Zacchaeus, come down. I'm going to your house today. Okay, let's talk about these questions here, okay? We talked about how the people look at Zacchaeus. I already mentioned that, right? Any other thoughts on that?
Really short trader.
Okay, all right. Yeah, this guy is full of greed, full of corruption. He's a traitor to his people. So, you know, I guess it would be an understatement to say they looked unfavorably upon him, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, all right. But what was Jesus' view of Zacchaeus? What'd you put down for that?
This was someone who was really seeking him out.
Okay.
Really
right.
Wanted to know him.
Okay.
Jesus saw his potential instead of who he was right now.
Okay, Jesus saw his potential. I like that. What else?
Someone who's lost and needed salvation.
Okay, yeah. He's lost. He's someone who needs to be saved. And he apparently, you know, Zacchaeus is interested at least in Jesus because he's, you know, he's gone to the effort of climbing up a tree in order to be able to at least see Jesus, right? So he's shown an interest in Jesus and so forth. Wes?
Yeah, I had a thought that came to my mind is that if Zacchaeus was, as people thought of him, as being greedy and unfair and against his people and things, why would he even have an interest to want to see Jesus?
No, I think that must have like got to him if he's, I mean, willing to entertain Jesus. Maybe he figured he needed a different direction in his life.
Okay. Well, keep in mind, all right, Zacchaeus is a Jew, right? So he's one of them. All right? So what would that tell us about maybe just religiously where he might be? Isn't he like everybody else looking for the Messiah? I mean, just because he's a tax collector doesn't mean he's not looking for the Messiah. Right? So he's wanting Messiah to come. He's going to be looking for him. It's just his occupation is one that is looked down upon by the people.
It's tough to be hated by your own people.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, does that help answer your question?
Sort of. I don't mean to get ahead of the class or anything, but it's just that, as you were saying, he was viewed completely different than the type of person that he was, I believe.
Right. Okay.
But as from looking at him, which in my mind is what basically the class is, the whole class is about looking at people for face value.
Right.
So if he had actually been that type of person, he wouldn't have no interest in Jesus whatsoever. You know, it didn't make him no different whether he saw him, who Jesus was, or what he did or nothing, because he was all about himself.
Okay.
If he was that type of person.
All right.
But my original question was, if he had been that type of person, why would he have went up in the tree, or why would he even have a desire to want to see Jesus?
Okay, I think I understand better what you were originally asking. You know, just think about, you know, again, we oftentimes put judgments on people and look at, you know, what they're doing and how they're behaving, and we decide that those are not people who I'm going to waste time telling about Jesus because they don't care about Jesus. But could we be wrong? Just because a person, I mean, isn't really those are the people that need Jesus, you see? In other words, just because he's living a life that, and I think it's obvious from the text here in the story, you know, yeah, he was corrupt. I mean, look at what he says. If I've cheated anyone, you know, like he, you know, we might read that as by accident, but yeah, okay, he's cheated people. Okay, you know, he's not a good guy. But Jesus's take on that would be, he's the kind of person I came for. And so, again, I think part of the lesson, and it's important for us to understand, is, I mean, we can look at Zacchaeus and go, he's nobody that's interested in Jesus. When maybe there's something going on in his life at that time or whatever that, man, he's ready.
But does he feel like he's up
to him? I don't know at that point. All I know is he wanted to see Jesus. He had a desire to see Jesus.
He apparently sees himself as not being all that powerful. There's something more powerful than him.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Okay. All right. Chuck, you had your hand up here a moment ago.
During that time, obviously, the word was getting around, but there is this person who's doing a miracle, who's healing, and not only that, but he's also says that he can forgive sins. So I'm sure that's getting out. And then when they find out that he's coming through town, curiosity.
Exactly.
The curiosity said, well, Zacchaeus, I imagine, was still going to the synagogue at that time.
Sure.
Even though
he had his own section.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, but nonetheless, he was still the people. He was among the people, though he was not treated justly.
Yeah.
Anyway, so when he finds, not only it's him, obviously, because the crowds were already following Jesus.
Yeah.
So here we say, what's going on? What's going on? If I may, so to try to make this dance short. My buddy and I, we took an impromptu trip down to Rome on bicycles. We parked in a parking lot. We said, where are we going to go? Let's just go that way. We just picked a direction. And sure enough, we got off the parking lot, and we were screaming down a hill. And we were hanging on. I look over to my buddy and say, hey, I said, what? You know, we're going to have to pedal up this thing. We get down to the plateau. We don't know where we are, but we see crowds of people. I see the police there. And I ask, what's going on?
St. Peter's Square. Yeah.
And then so the crowd yeah. sometimes is big. What's going
what's
on?
What's happening? Yeah. Yeah. Curiosity. What's going on? You know. And so he probably, you know, it's a good idea. He maybe just kind of got caught up in what's happening. Oh, I've heard of this Jesus, you know, let me check him out, you know, and so forth. Whatever the case may have been, what did Jesus know about it?
Everything.
He knew that Zacchaeus needed him. Okay? All right. Brian, real quick, we're out of time here, guys.
The whole perspective on all the things that we've talked about, when we look at sinners sometimes, we look at sinners and how bad their sin is, and how bad their attachment to them are, and we give them no hope.
Okay?
That's the one that Jesus always gives us.
Yeah.
Okay. No matter where you're at in life, no matter where you're at in the spot, through Jesus, you always have hope. And we're supposed to do the same thing for everyone.
That's right.
I was just thinking, you know, those crowds, they might have enjoyed Jesus getting the Pharisees stirring them up. You know, they're holier than now. Mm-hmm. You know, some of them, they were, but also doing this, he brought everybody the wrong way by going to Zacchaeus' house because he was collecting taxes from all people, whether they were, you know, no matter what social class they were in.
Yeah.
I mean, he kind of...
Yeah, we're going to talk more about that in our worship lesson here. Okay, thank you all very much. I want you to be, between now and next week, be thinking specifically about the statement there in the middle of the page. Name three family members or friends who are lost. How do you see them? All right? And we'll pick up there next week. Thank you all very much.